Happy Bitcoin Wednesday, freaks. It's your host, Odell, here for another Citadel Dispatch, the interactive live show focused on actionable Bitcoin and freedom tech discussion. I am honored here to be joined by Ken, the co-founder of VLS Tech. His project is focused on improving the security of Lightning nodes. We've talked about Lightning nodes many times on this show. We've talked about key management risk. We've talked about how you would always prefer cold storage over hot wallets when it comes to protecting your keys because you don't want them to connect to the internet. But at the same time, this show, I run 5 Lightning nodes, and I know a lot of the freaks run Lightning nodes. We're all doing them on hot wallets. So today we're talking about how we can improve the security of our Lightning nodes. How's it going, Ken? Welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you, Matt, for having me. Looking forward to talking about how to make Lightning more secure.
So, where should we get started here? I guess an interesting part to get started here is what is your background specifically?
So I'm an engineer. In the earlier days, I was a performance engineer. So I worked with Unix systems, threading, parallel processing, stuff that ran in server racks. Almost never do UI. When I do UI, it looks really bad. So I try to work with people who have much better sense than I do in that. In around 2013, I got interested in Bitcoin and decided to do a project in order to learn things and meet people. And so I wrote an Android wallet, it succeeded in meeting people and learning a whole bunch of stuff. I'm no longer interested in doing a wallet like that, but it did get me very interested in Bitcoin custody.
What was the name of that wallet? Do I know that wallet?
It was Wallet 32. It had a walrus as a logo. It's a long time ago.
I dig a walrus logo. That's a great logo.
And it was around for about a year, I think. I think it was the first HD, BIP32 Android wallet. And so I had used Electrum before that and thought, wow, this whole HD thing is really great. It's a really excellent way to back up a wallet because you only have to save the one seed, and then you don't have to update that backup as you add addresses and use the wallet in daily use. And that was the case with wallets which came before that. The backups were frequently a weak point in that they weren't up to date, and they were also, since you're touching them so often, they were less secure because you had to go get them and update them.
Kids these days don't know how easy they have it.
They sure don't. I mean, literally files with lists of addresses and keys in them sometimes. It was really awful. Earlier when you did your intro, you mentioned that you guys are running hot wallets, and I was just going to add that, chime in with, well, you have to, because the Lightning protocol requires that the keys be available in order to update the commitments, even when money is not being sent. So for example, if the fee rate changes, then the commitment will be updated in order to have a fee rate which better predicts what it might need to be. And so your node needs to sign that updated commitment.
Right.
To receive money, same thing. So you're going to see a new commitment which has more money on your side of the channel, which is a good thing. But you have to assign it and say, yes, this, I approve of this. This looks good. And so for those reasons, Lightning nodes cannot be usefully cold. They really have to be hot wallets.
By design.
By design. Another related thing is, when you're doing a hot wallet for an exchange or a broker or any kind of large enterprise, you would endeavor to keep most of the funds out of the hot wallet. You would only have in the hot wallet what you needed to do day-to-day stuff. And frequently, at the beginning of the week or the day, whatever your business is like, you would estimate how much funds you were going to need and then, put that amount in for the day or for the time period.
Because if your hot wallet's compromised, then you just lose 1% of funds or whatever.
Exactly. Always minimize. It's just like the till in a bank. The tellers are going to have small amounts of money. And if you need a really big withdrawal, you have to arrange for it ahead of time. And then they go get it from the safe or a different branch even. The point is that I know where I was. In the Lightning Network, you have to keep liquidity available.
Right.
You really can't take it out of the node. You need to have a bunch of liquidity in the node. And then that's what makes it useful to send money to other places and do routing and stuff like that. And both of these things lead up to sort of an astounding amount of money at risk because it's hot. To do a quick thing, like if you were a large retailer and you had a million channels and each of them had $100 in it, that's $100 million in an internet connected, you know, active computer. And that's frightening.
And yeah, specifically to have outbound liquidity, to be able to send payments or route outbound, you need to have equivalent amount of money locked up on the node.
Right. And so DevRandom, my co-founder and I guess it was 3 years ago or so, had previously been working on a Bitcoin custody thing for enterprises and stuff. And we were looking for something more interesting to do. And this Lightning thing looked like it was dangerous.
Hashtag endless.
We needed to, you know, we needed to raise the game, find some ways to make it safer. One thing that's worth pointing out is people are comfortable with Bitcoin wallets because in many cases, they only have XPubs in them. In other words, to receive money, you don't have to have any funds hot. You can receive directly into cold storage. So the sensibility of people who were used to working with Bitcoin was that it was, you know, kind of this safe. And the problem was that Lightning is a really different thing, and it's not that safe. It's much more dangerous. And so we wanted to try to find ways to make it safer. And so that's where VLS comes in.
Yeah, I mean, Ken, it's pretty crazy. So, I mean, I got into Bitcoin around when you got into Bitcoin. And it's just pretty crazy, like, for Bitcoiners that came in post-Lightning, maybe, like, I'm not going to include, like, the first 2 years of Lightning, but, like, that came in, like, 2020 or 2021. A lot of them might have come in as Lightning first, and for me it was obviously the opposite. Lightning didn't exist yet, and it's so interesting. You know, everything has trade offs. We talk about that a lot of times in the show, but it's interesting how the trade offs specific for Lightning have kind of turned on its head all of these axioms or you know these general best practices that we talk about. These ideas of keeping your keys cold, right? Like these ideas of not using custodial wallets. We see way more users are using custodial wallets on Lightning because of the trade-off balance that Lightning presents and makes it difficult to use on mobile. And it's just a real, it's like, to me, like I've personally come to appreciate on-chain Bitcoin, regular Bitcoin transactions so much more because I've had to do so much in the Lightning space. Just this idea that like you can actually generate your keys cold and receive Bitcoin to an address without ever going online, without having to deal with liquidity, that like self-custody is incredibly easy on something like mobile where you don't need to have, you know, 24/7 interactivity and all this stuff. And Lightning just adds all these this complexity to it. And what is the benefit that we get out of it? We get cheaper transactions. We get, you know,
faster,
extremely fast settlement, basically instant settlement.
Privacy hopefully is much better.
And we get tangential privacy benefits, especially on the sending side. So ever since Lightning began, there's been two major promises that I've heard many times repeated. Is some way to secure the hot wallets, you know, some kind of additional signing mechanism to secure the hot wallets. And this idea of very easy, sovereign as possible, mobile Lightning usage. So obviously we're going to table that second one. But the first one, how are you guys thinking about solving this hot wallet risk issue?
So actually what you always want to do in a security situation is use the simplest, cheapest, easiest technique, which gets you the security you need. And you only raise the, you know, go to a more expensive or more difficult technique when it's required, when the simple thing just won't work anymore. So in the case of Lightning, all we're doing is using another tried and true technique, which has been used for, you know, forever in other businesses. So when they did have to have signing that was happening, you know, and it was hot, then folks used HSMDs.
Right.
Oops. make sure I'm still, am I, can you still hear me?
Yes, sir. HSMDs.
Okay. So we're modeled on an HSMD.
So HSM is a hardware security module.
An HSMD takes the keys out of the entity that needs the signatures and puts them in a safer computing environment, and then protects them with all sorts of additional things. So you
reduce the attack surface
by making it an independent computer, and then you make it a much tougher computer to break into. It might run a different operating system. It's going to have much less operating system interface, and it's not connecting to hopefully any other computers.
I mean, we can think
of what VLS is doing. It's basically an HSMD or hardware signer, if you want to think of it that way, for a Lightning node.
What is the
earlier you mentioned mobile, and actually VLS may have an impact on mobile as well, because what we're doing is distilling the custody aspect of the Lightning wallet to the smallest amount of code. And ideally, in the future, we'd love to run that in the trust zones in phones. And so VLS may be a candidate at the low end as well, because you can that way you can protect your keys on a phone or other similar small device.
Can you hear me, Ken?
I think so. I think I lost my headphones there. Can you still hear me?
I can still hear you, but I don't think you could hear me.
Give me 1 second. Let me see if I can.
He secured himself out of his headphones.
Yeah.
I guess he heard that part. We're hanging in there with you.
Okay.
And I had him back on once. He was disconnected for 10 minutes while I just talked to the audience.
No, I can hear you fine. As long as we're not getting feedback through the microphone.
I don't hear an echo.
So then let's just
roll. Very good. So what does D stand for in HSMD? A daemon?
Daemon, yeah. So when Core Lightning was setting up their architecture, I don't know if you know Core Lightning well, but it's based on having multiple daemons that all intercommunicate. And that gives them some security benefits, because if you, for example, take over a channel D, which is talking to a channel partner, that doesn't give you access to the state of the signer. That's in a different one. That's the HSMD. So it's hardware security module daemon. Now, Core Lightning names it that, but it's not really an HSM. It's sort of a HSM goes here kind of identification. It's aspirate, right, as Rusty puts it. And so we're actually trying to make that true. So the basic idea behind VLS when used with Core Lightning is you remove the HSMD and you replace it with a proxy. And the proxy just handles all the exact same commands as the HSMD would, but it sends them through a secured connection to a signer, which is hopefully located somewhere else. You don't want it in the same computing environment. You can use different kinds of communication. So a very secure way to do it is via a serial line to that signer, which is then otherwise not on the network. And that becomes really hard then for the attacker to get onto the signer, because it, you know, a serial line has much less attack surface.
Got it. So, I mean, if I was in simple terms, like big picture on how you visualize this, I'm running my Lightning node in some server farm somewhere. And then I have a hardware signer somewhere else, and they're connected to each other. And the hardware signer is always interactive because it needs to constantly sign updates and whatnot. Now, on your website, you talk about a blind signer versus a validating signer. Presumably a blind signer just signs everything that they're given. And then your concept is a validating signer. So the validating signer is actually checking what it's signing, and I guess is listening to some kind of preset rules that the user is setting, like sign anything that falls under this.
Well, so there's a bunch of different, let's see. First of all, blind signing is incredibly dangerous, because if a node gives you, for example, a closing transaction, and let's just for purposes of discussion say that a channel was 50-50 balance, so you're entitled to half the money in the channel, But if it gives a blind signer a closing transaction where all the money goes to the other guy, then they've just stolen all that money.
It doesn't really
solve anything. So if you sign that transaction, you're giving away all that money. So a validating signer would know that that wasn't the case and would decline to sign that. It would refuse to sign that. The policies that it's enforcing are designed so that even if the note is completely compromised, so our security model or assumption is that the note has been completely taken over by a bad guy and is now, you know, doing everything it can to steal the money. And we are going to prevent that. We will not allow you to lose any significant funds because we're able to see the state and make sure that we don't sign things which lose money.
Does that mean that?
Go ahead.
Does that mean that the signer is essentially running? It's a full Lightning node on the signer side too, because they need to understand what the state is and what's going on.
It's far from a full node. So the node has just tons of stuff which do not relate to custody. So you have routing, you have gossip, channel announcements. We can go on all these different things which don't really affect whether or not you lose money.
But
the signer is doing it, does have a complete set of signer states. So for example, it knows the commitment transaction for each side. In some cases, it has to know two about the remote one. So when you send a new one to your counterparty, you know the new one that you've sent, and you have also the old one that the last one you heard from him about. So it could be either one of those. And then when he revokes his old one, then you're back to just the new one. Anyway, we have a complete set of states, so we can enforce that you don't lose any money.
Got it. But it needs to have some kind of view into the network and what's going on with the node, I guess.
Well, it turns out that the signing messages themselves give you almost all the information. So when a channel is opened, they're going to ask you to sign the commitment and the funding transaction, and those define what the channel setup looks like. For example, we can look at that and go, okay, it's transferring 10 million Satoshis from the on-chain wallet, and it's going into a channel that has 10 million Satoshis value to this side. And so that's cool because that means you're not losing any money. We can get that back. And so that's, for example, how we would look at an opening transaction to make sure, a funding transaction, to make sure that it was okay to sign that. Similarly, with a closing transaction, we know the balance, what it was, and when it's time to close, we want to see that the closing transaction delivers your fair share to you.
Right. Another
thing to add is a node would have an allow list. So it's a list of addresses which are safe. A good example would be your cold wallet for your layer one, your Bitcoin addresses should be, you should have an XPub there, which so you can always transfer money out of your node into your Bitcoin cold wallet without having to do any additional stuff. It will just, you know, allow you to do that because it knows that those addresses are yours and you're not losing money when you send it to them. Another example is if you're a large operation and run multiple nodes and have connections between the nodes, you can put the other nodes in a given node's allow list. And so it knows that it's okay to do, for example, a key send from one node to another, doesn't require additional approval or processing because it knows that money is still in your custody. It's still beneficial to you.
Got it. That makes sense to me. Because that's the core of the problem is at least in terms of fund loss, I guess there's two main vulnerabilities, and I don't know if that's the right way to phrase it. In terms of fund loss, if you're a Lightning node operator, there's two things that a malicious actor can do. They can do a malicious closed channel state where they're lying about what the balances are on the close, or they can just withdraw money from your node. They can just literally just press send on-chain transaction, right? And this is designed to protect against both those situations.
Sure. There's also, you could make payments. So simply a bad guy, if you
That's
didn't
what I'm
have
saying, like an on-chain payment, like an on-chain withdrawal or whatever. Oh, on-chain. Oh,
no, a Lightning payment. Lightning. You just say key send 10 million Satoshis over there.
Right.
That money's gone. And so, and a blind signer would sign it because they don't know not to. So I would say it's really sort of two things. One is you want to keep the keys remote, because if the bad guy has the keys, obviously they can sort of run amok and do whatever they want.
Right.
But then the next thing you quickly realize is simply moving the keys remote is not nearly enough, because there's too many ways to attack. We just outlined two or three, the clothes, sending money or withdrawing money. But I think if you think it through, there's really quite a few different ways to lose money. And then there's griefing. So bad guy can do things where the money gets held up or is burnt to fees. We want to make sure that the amount of money going to fees is appropriate. Fees are a hard thing, actually, because you're going to see a little slippage due to fees in normal operating. And we have to allow that. In fact, we really can't interfere with that, because if the fee market is high, your transactions need to go through. And so they need to have high fees in order for you to defend against breach transactions and other things. There's, you know, parts of the Lightning protocol that require timely resolution. So fees are an area that we're constantly focusing on and working on. I think in the future, we're hoping to see a useful fee oracle infrastructure developed, not just for us, but for everybody. Everybody needs it. So what you need is a way to ask a bunch of trusted computers, please attest to what you think a reasonable fee is to get something, you know, closed in 24 hours or, you know, whatever you pick. And those would be signed messages, and you would be able to say, ah, okay, three out of the five have said it's this, so I think that this is a reasonable fee number. And then you could veto a transaction that spent 10 times that in fees, for example, because that just doesn't look reasonable.
Right.
The key thing is actually to distill exactly what you need to do custody and no more. So it's the smallest amount of state and messaging.
I like that.
And then that not only makes things more secure, but it does also offers other opportunities to establish custody in places where you can't run a full node. So a very common idea, or a very good idea, is to run most of the node in the cloud, and then just have the end user have the smallest amount, have a signer, a VLS signer, so that they control custody of the funds. But the actual operational stuff is all done in the cloud. And so Blockstream's Greenlight is doing exactly that. And they're using VLS as the signer inside Greenlight. So
that makes sense to me. We've covered that to a degree, at least on the surface level, like also Breeze SDK. This idea that like the keys are on the phone, right? But the node is in the cloud. So but that comes with the negative that, I mean, first of all, there's not going to be a routing node in that situation. And then second of all, there needs to be some level of interactivity, right? Like to receive, you need to actually be online and your phone needs to sign things, right?
I think you actually could be a routing node. Let me outline a new thing that we're working on right now. So this is not in VLS just yet, but we're hoping it will be in the next release, which will be in a couple months. I'm calling it tag team signing. So what you have is two different signers, but they have the same keys in it. They control the same custody, the same Lightning wallet, if you want to think of it that way. But one of them is on 24/7 and only receives. So its policies are set to, I only receive money, I don't send money. But routing would be okay. You could have that one do routing, for example. And then a separate signer, and maybe that one's on your phone, but it doesn't need to be on all the time. It's really not on all the time. But when you want to make a payment or do something exceptional, like make a payment, you would turn on your phone and that signer would tag the other one and say, hey, let me do this. Let me do it for a bit. First, I'll come up to bring my state up to sync up my state. And then I'm going to make a payment or two. And then I'm going to tag you again and we'll transfer control back to the other signer to do receive and route only. And that has a very appealing features for folks who mostly receive and occasionally send. And it also has nice features for robustness, because if you lose one of those signers, you've still got the keys in the other, or if the signer is destroyed or something like that. So it seems for multiple reasons to be a really great way to go.
But then you're expecting the user to be running VLS somewhere 24/7.
So Stackwork, another partner that we're working with, Sphinx is another name for the same guy. So
no, Sphinx is like, Paul's got two projects, Sphinx right. and Stackwork. Yeah.
So we're working with them and they're putting VLS on a very small hardware device. It's an ESP32. Don't quote me on this, but it might be like $10.
So recording you on it, Ken.
Yeah, fairly inexpensive. And the vision there is that you would plug it into a wall socket in your house. It would connect to Wi-Fi and then connect up to the cloud where the node is actually operating and do the signing that we're talking about. Right. So that would be the receive only signer. It would
and
just
because it's not a full Lightning node, the hardware can be much cheaper, the bandwidth is less, everything, yada, yada, yada.
Exactly. And also it's in your, it's in your possession and you're not doing all the other operational stuff. So the nodes in those cases are being professionally administered. So people are keeping track of the resource usage and how much, bandwidth it needs and let me get a better connection for it. It may even be the case that the node operators are arranging for liquidity, if you want to think about it, because it is possible for those things to be justified to the signer that they are not losing you money. This is complicated, but for example, suppose I want to loop in or loop out. I'll just do a loop out. One of the ways you do that is by putting a transaction on the chain, which can only be redeemed when you know the pre-image. And then, when you send the money to the Lightning transfer, that's the other part of that loop. You get the pre-image, which allows you to then claim the UTXO on chain. And that can be, you can just show that transaction to VLS and VLS could see that you can't lose money because it knows that you're protected by that pre-image. That feature is not in place yet, but that is planned. So that's an example how certain balancing and routing operations can be done in a trustless way. I don't like the word trustless. You don't trust. Yeah.
A trustless doesn't exist. It's trust minimized.
Right. But in a trust minimized way. So you do it in a safe way where the hardware can say, yeah, no, this is okay.
So is that how you expect most people to use VLS? They'll be running a cheap hardware device at home and plug it in and connect it to the router? Or is it... I know your website breaks it into enterprise and the app side is it's not as interesting to me. Breeze Greenlight, I think it's massive for consumer adoption. That we can have, semi-sovereign, trust minimized Lightning wallets. But that makes sense to me just because it's a professional operation. It's not hobbyist node operators or independent sovereign node operators. Blockstream can figure out a system for it. Breeze can figure out a system for it. They use the phone to hold the keys. It'll be really polished. The UX will be really nice. But in terms of VLS for an independent node operator, is that how you view it happening? Them operate, they're running some kind of hardware at home and that's running 24/7. And then maybe their nodes at Voltage or something running on AWS.
We also run on this device. This is an STM32. This is just a demonstration of the technology, and then it uses a serial USB cable to connect to your node. So even if you're co-locating the signer on, sitting on top of the node, the advantages you get are that a network attack cannot easily get into the signer at all. So you're probably safe from a whole lot of different attacks, which would affect a home node operator. One thing to say here was that we started off with the enterprise use case in mind. That was the original vision that got VLS fired up because we said, wow, if Lightning is successful, these nodes will exist. They're clearly going to be a target. There's a financial incentive to get this right and to make it safe. And so this should be an area that will get, attention and funding and do what it needs. We discovered the low end stuff like the Greenlight and the STM32 stuff, the ESP32 stuff that Stackwork is doing, it came out of the blue, at the low end, it makes sense too, because we are reducing the amount of state as much as possible. And that has a lot of beneficial effects for low-end hardware and things like that. And then there's middle stuff. So if you are a small retailer, so maybe you're a coffee shop, right, and you'd like to have a Lightning node running, you could secure that by using one or more of these things that we're talking about. So for example, you might use the receive only trick in the coffee shop, because mostly you're receiving all day long. And then at the end of the day, the owner might be moving some money out of the Lightning wallet. So, and unfortunately, I don't have enough vision to know which of those things is actually going to take off. We're carefully working to make sure we're not constraining it arbitrarily. In other words, we really want to be able to support all of those things. There's some pretty different tuning involved. So a few months ago, we tuned for small memories, low resource signers. So that meant going through and making sure we're using as little heap as possible, for example, during signing operations. And there was quite a bit of work done there to reduce our heap memory footprint and the amount of memory that it takes us to process given requests. Then for enterprises, we need to work on throughput. So enterprises can afford a lot more expensive hardware, but they're going to want to do thousands, you know, per minute of whatever, routing or receiving payments or sending payments. And so we need to make sure that we have exploited all of the available parallelism, for example. We want to make sure that two different channels on the same node can be, you know, doing stuff concurrently, because all of the policies and stuff we're talking about mostly can be enforced at the channel level. Routing is an exception. Routing, you have to know that this channel is going to have a surplus of, you know, a million satoshis, and this other channel is going to have a deficit of just less than that. So you get a fee, and right, the VLS will see that and go, okay, that's okay.
I mean, I guess the way I mean, VLS is a company built on top of an open source project.
It's actually just an open source project. There is no
company.
No company to speak of. There is a nonprofit that we use to, you know, to fund our develop, to, you know, to pay the developers, but there isn't any equity. There's no attempt to control the intellectual property. There's, you know, it's really, we're an open source project that we're trying to get this so it's usable. And then I think there will be follow-on companies that use it to make something. So we're going to take VLS, put it in a hardware device, and make a.
So you have no intent of monetizing this?
Not directly. We intend to make VLS successful as an open source project.
I have respect.
I mean, in the future, we may monetize other things, but I don't think you can make a project like this work if it is being proprietary or controlled in any way, if you think about it.
No, because I mean, I agree.
Nobody's going to put up with that. They need to know that they control the ability to do it in the future themselves.
You can't have a project like this that requires permission, but I guess if I was going to run a monetized business off of this, I would have the open source project. You know, independent node operators would run on ESP32s. They could build it themselves. They could do whatever they want. And then there's probably a pretty lucrative enterprise business there. I mean, like, you know, how much Bitcoin does River have on their nodes? How much Bitcoin does Binance have on their nodes? Kraken have on their nodes? Like, there's an enterprise model there that is, you know, maybe a mix of support and actual hardware. You know, like actually provide them hardware. There's something there in that regard, and you could keep the actual project open source and anyone could build it, yada, yada, yada.
In the future, it may be that people want certain features to be accelerated, you know, sooner than they would normally be available on the roadmap. And so it's possible that there, I think that would be grant strategy. I'm not an expert at that kind of stuff. We're really not in this to try to get rich at all. We're trying to make it happen. And then I think there's a lot of exciting things that happen after it is, it's working and it's, you know, demonstrated and it has the support it needs. Really, we want to run with all of the different nodes. So we'd like it to become a standard. We'd like to work to standardize the protocol so that all of the different nodes in the world can use it. It would also be great if there were even competitive projects, come to think of it.
Right.
I mean, maybe there you can tune it differently or just have a different viewpoint on something that's worthwhile. So that would be cool too.
I love it.
Yep.
Have you guys applied to OpenSats yet?
We have, yes.
Okay. Actually, I think I knew that already. It was a dumb question. But that's why OpenSats exist. But I mean, so where's my, like, so I love Freedom Tech. Like, I think free and open source software is hope. Like, I think that's how we solve a lot of the broken incentives we have in the world. So I completely support that. But like my dream projects like there's something to be said about an open source project that's completely false, that can find some kind of sustainable way of monetizing. And like my dream situation for OpenSats is we fund these projects, and we just give them the breathing room in the beginning. Like we give them enough breathing room where they can get to a point where they can actually have some kind of revenue stream or something without compromising the false ideals. And then we can divert our funding to a new project. And then all of a sudden we start scaling like that, where these projects, we're just giving them training wheels in the beginning, just so they can get off the ground and then they can, you know, be sustainable without grants in the future. Like that is the, to me, that's the big unlock. That's where you start to have like really exponential returns in terms of freedom.
Right. I mean, from my perspective, open source is critical. It's absolutely necessary. But decentralization, which, you know, Bitcoin's all about, is really the thing that makes this, makes me happy. I love the idea of a technology which gives, empowers people. So in the case of all of this, it's about making payments without having to have the permission or regulation or lots of other negative aspects of, you know, banking. I shouldn't have to worry about a bank creating extra accounts that I don't need or monetizing me with fees and charges or figuring out what order to cash my checks in order to maximize their, you know, fee penalties, all these evil things they do. So this is an opportunity to empower people to transfer money, you know, plainly and simply by themselves. So it reduces the evil in the world that way, because you can always be outcompeted by someone who's just more honest. And that's a really good thing.
Ken, I mean, I love it. I think, first of all, thank you. I mean, it's sorely needed. I always joke around with the freaks that I've been using Lightning now. I've been running Lightning nodes for almost 4 years now. I don't really know how much sats I've lost. It's kind of just, I know I haven't lost the majority of it because it would be obvious, but sometimes I just wonder if I'm just getting fucked on things that I just, you know, it just gets lost in the mess. So anything to improve security of light. And also I wake up every morning with the assumption that like maybe my Lightning nodes are drained. And like, that's just how you have to operate. But at the same time, like this show is, I don't know if you see the Noster comments in the center, like this show is almost purely supported on donations via Lightning just because it can handle smaller donation amounts. We get some on-chain donations, but it's mostly Lightning. And if I have liquidity issues, if I have nodes down, whatnot, like we just don't receive donations. So Lightning is something that we rely on heavily here at Dispatch, and I rely on heavily in my daily life. And the security has just lagged behind. And it's been kind of fine because I just don't really think we've been in an adversarial environment yet. But that could happen at any point, and we need to be prepared for it ahead of time. So, I mean, thank you for that. And thank you for really caring about open source and the principles that stand behind it. Also that, you know, for something like this, it needs to be open source.
Absolutely.
But like, where do we sit in the timeline here? Like, is this like, I hate when people like hype up things that, and this is not an accusation. I just hate when like people are like, oh, like we don't have to worry about that because Ken's working on it. And it's going to be great. It's going to be fabulous. Like you're going to love it. And we just like, then we just dismiss it. And we're like, okay, like Ken's working on it. And it just 2 years down the line, 3 years down the line, I don't have anything to show for it. Like, where do we stand on this timeline?
Well, so Greenlight is moving into I want to be very careful about status updates like that that are not on my project. But you know, they're getting very close to production with you know various sub customers, if you want to call it that way. And so that forces us to be ready. It's a forcing function. We have to be there. We have to be working. We have to have a minimum set of features. You know, we're always adding more stuff, and there's advanced policies. So, for example, some of the blue sky I had there about balancing nodes with loops in and loops out and does not exist yet. We're going to work on that. Mostly, we need a customer who needs it. If you're following me, we don't really want to build a feature that isn't going to be used immediately. We really want the feedback of you know. Actually, we want to ask you up front, like, how does this need to work exactly? And then when we know there's a trade-off, we want to come in and say, you know, do you want A or B, or how do you want that mixed? Then we want to deliver something, and we want you to come back and say it worked great, or it didn't work at all, or it great except, you know, X, Y, and Z, and we work on those. So we've been lucky to have partners over the past year. So Stackworks, their team, we work with them daily. We have weekly meetings with them. We're always asking them questions, and they're telling us, you know, which parts are the remaining obstacles to them going live. Same thing with Greenlight. And so that's the secret to all of this, is for us to find partners who have a need. And then we look at it as we're exploiting them to do the market research we need. Right. And get the feedback we need. It's, you know, we can't do it without that stuff, or we can't do it well without that stuff. So yeah, I mean, we're trying to move along as fast as we can. Another big thing is features. So the Lightning world is very is active in terms of adding features. So a good example is splicing. So splicing is being rolled out in core Lightning right now. I think Async already has it. They're going to work on interoperability, and we're hustling to make sure that we can sign for splicing, you know, enforce all the same policies around the splices. But splicing is complicated. So we have to keep our heads down and work hard to get that to happen.
Do you have a good relationship with the Async team?
Sure. I mean, we're friendly with them. We get advice from them. They have built their own solution. I believe they run the largest Lightning node on the network.
Yeah, that was my next question. Like, what's cool about Lightning is that we have multiple implementations, multiple teams working on it. But what's really cool about Async is like they've always just been like this vertical stack, and like everything's open source. Like other people can build on it, but at the end of the day, it's like they're trying to run Phoenix Wallet, and they're trying to do it the best way possible. And they have this massive node that they run that runs Async, or that runs Eclair. And Async's the company, and then it powers Phoenix, and they were really quick to get splicing. And my next question for you was, I wouldn't be surprised if Async has their own solution where they're like essentially doing VLS with their node.
They released a white paper in June, recent, where they describe how they secure that big node.
Yeah.
And it's fairly complicated, and I want to do it from memory, but it involves
the node. Like it's fucking huge.
Yeah, it's giant. And there's some rarefied cloud services that they're using. I'm not going to get the name off the top of my head, but look for that paper, and that describes everything. That's great. That, you know, if you have the resources to do that, and the developers and that it takes to understand that and work on it and tune it, that will be a good solution for that kind of node. We're trying to make it so that we have a general purpose tool which can be used for many more nodes than just that one. And TBAST has said in public that when VLS is ready, they'll, you know, consider using it. Awesome. Which is all we ask, you know. We're constantly in discussion with them over whatever protocol things are happening. So splicing is very much in the fray right now. And, you know, just yesterday we were chatting back and forth, trying to refine and understand the finer points of, you know, what this means, what that means, what do you do when you see this? So it's a very cooperative yet still competitive environment. And we're hopeful that out of that, we will get, you know, the right things will happen. If a team is, you know, doing particular excellence in a particular area, we'd like to, you know, see that rewarded. And then we obviously want to combine all the best parts long term. Hopefully we'll evolve towards nodes which are, you know, stronger, have more features, and are more secure. So
I mean, Ken, just completely selfishly, first of all, you keep mentioning Core Lightning, Breeze SDK and Greenlight are both Core Lightning based, is my understanding. Is this Core Lightning specific? Like, what's my time? Ken, what I'm trying to get out of you is, like, just humble Lightning node operator running LND. Like, what is my, like, when am I going to, and is, feel free to just be like, fuck you, Matt. Like, you can run it today and you're just not doing it.
We love LND. Actually, use it. We were closest to LND when we started. Our first initial work was on LND directly and right. Not the others. LND's signing abstraction is a little challenging. So it requires some adaptation, let me call it upstream in LND to do this. And so when we saw that Core Lightning had an HSMD already identified, that was just begging for us to come and drop a proxy in there. And so that's how we got there. The LND effort right now, there's a project from NYDIG called LND Server. Apologies if I get it wrong. And it's Alex Axelrod, I hope I'm getting the name right, is working on that. And he is working towards a proxy. So that will run in or with LND and connect to VLS. So there is an effort underway to connect LND to VLS. And we're
awesome.
We love it, and we're, you know, happy to support it in any way we can. Doing the node integration requires quite a bit of work, actually, on both sides. So one thing we're doing is we have to submit pull requests upstream with the nodes in order to get additional information. Like, what's a good example? Sometimes when you mention an address that's in the wallet, it's helpful if you tell us the index, the wallet index,
right,
of that address, because then we can immediately verify it. Otherwise, we'd have to go do some painful search to see if it was there.
Scan all the addresses,
basically. Yeah, which we're not going to do. So we needed to go in and add a hint, if you will, on wallet addresses to make sure that that they were telling us the index. So that's just another one is, there are some messages that are not exactly signatures, but they're critical for the for VLS to see. What's an example? When channel peers revoke their commitments, they're revealing a secret, which makes it possible for the other side to apply a justice transaction if they breach in the future. That's a mouthful, right. but anyway, so there's a revealing of a secret. VLS needs the local node to show us the revocation so that we can guarantee that it's actually correct. Because if a bad peer sent an incorrect revocation, but we just believed it to be okay, later we would discover that we couldn't do a justice transaction,
right,
because we actually had what we needed. The same thing is true with the commitment that the remote peer sends to us. So the remote peer sends you a commitment and then you save it. And then later, if you need to go on chain, you're going to use it. But VLS needs to see that commitment to make sure that it's well-formed and isn't stealing money from you. So those are cases where we're not actually delivering a signature. We're not signing anything, but we need to see those things in order to know that it's safe to advance the state. So those have to be added to the original signing infrastructure in each of these nodes doesn't usually have a call out to send those to the, you know, to the remote signer.
So you need some buy-in from the maintainers of the implementations.
We absolutely do. And we're really blessed with Alex, who's from NYDIG, because he used to work with the Lightning Labs guys, I think maybe 5 years ago, don't quote me on that, but he's known to them and knows that code base inside out. And so he's the ideal person to figure out how to make such a proxy. We had, you know, not as much exposure to Lightning Labs, and so it was going to be a painful uphill battle for us to figure out how to do that proxy.
I mean, meanwhile, it's like 80% of of non-professional nodes or L&D or something like that?
Yeah, it. We want to cover them all. I kind of view it as the progression here is we're going to go along adding features and doing things until suddenly some killer app is going to emerge. And I have some guesses of what it might be, but I'm probably wrong. But when it happens, everyone will get it. It'll be like CryptoKitties for Ethereum back in, was that 2018, 2017? It'll be like NFTs, you know, a couple years ago on, you know, or it'll be like ordinals and inscriptions. Now, whether or not you like those things, they definitely stimulate interest and activity.
The killer app is going to be, people are going to lose a shit ton of money on Lightning. And we're going to scramble to harden all the systems. And the unfortunate reality is, like, you wish the support happened before that happens, but it just, I don't think it happens until people start losing money. Like, it's been, like I said, it's been 4 years of like real Lightning usage since like January-ish 2019. Like, that was when the Lightning torch was going on, like very few wallets supported it yet. So I'll just give it 4 years. It's been 4 years. And we just really haven't seen many attacks. Like, people are not using it in a very secure way. And like, as long as, like, think about if you go back a decade to on-chain Bitcoin usage, like this basic idea that you only keep 1% in your hot wallet, 99% in your cold wallet, and you practice, you know, key security in that regard and fund segregation. Like, the reason that became general best practice in the industry was because exchanges lost a shit ton of money. Like, that is why it happened. They learned by touching the stove. it's going to be the same thing with node operators.
They're still learning. I mean, the Prime Trust fiasco where they lost six keys.
I mean, I think that was fraud, but I mean,
I always suspect I better not.
Yeah, Ken, this is, you know, I don't know how many podcasts you do, but you keep saying, don't quote me on that. That's literally what people are going to do. We're just going to quote you on, you're being quoted.
I know. Again. Ken says that, that they're crooks. No. I totally agree. So my progression is killer app. Then we'll see the amount of commerce going on in Lightning will explode. It'll go.
Oh, right. A killer Lightning app. Right. And then
what'll happen is these nodes aren't prepared for 100x scaling. Like, suddenly, instead of $1,000 on the node, you're going to have $100,000. And suddenly it becomes worth some hacker's time to try to figure out if he can take your node down. Another angle on that is we're adding features really fast to all these different nodes. So the amount of code development going on in all the different teams, I won't, you know, it isn't just one of them, it's all of them, is really, really rapid and aggressive. And unfortunately, that comes at some concern, comes with some concern about security, because you things become secure after you've studied them for a while and after people have had a chance to look at them and attack them. And so if you're, you know, bolting things onto a car as fast as you can, the safety might, you know, there might be some interaction between things that you didn't expect.
And specifically for something like a dedicated signer, right? Like, you want at least some level of ossification. Like, it'd be ideal, like, if you're not updating the signer over and over again, you know, right now I always joke around. Another common best practice in Bitcoin is not to update so quickly, because updates can be an attack vector, and Lightning flipped that on its head. It's like, oh, immediately update, like, you'll lose all your money unless you update right away. And it's just like everyone goes and clicks a big blue update button.
Well, earlier when you mentioned you weren't sure if you were losing money with your nodes, probably let's assume that there's no nobody stealing from you. Probably the biggest fund loss in recent history is undesirable channel force closes
happens on the fee market. The fees go up,
market moves, and then people get those get confused, and nobody's being dishonest. But based on that, we close the channel, which is the conservative thing to do. But often you're doing that in a, you know, crazy fee market, and sometimes you're going to lose more money than you like. So those are cases where adding, you know, working on that, getting anchors in place. So anchors are going to be a huge benefit there, because you will not have to preload the commitment transaction with a huge fee in case the fee market is high next week. You can have, in fact, very little fee, and you just bump it as necessary next week if you need to do it. And not having to negotiate that fee means there won't be so many forced closes that you don't want. So maybe channels will only get closed when you want to close them. Splicing helps some of that.
Forced closes.
Splicing helps because you can top off a channel or take out of a channel without having to remove the channel, which is expensive from a routing perspective. So when you take down a channel and make a new one in its place, it takes a while for the rest of the network to trust that channel. So it might take weeks before that channel is as effective as the old one was. So being able to splice money in or out will allow you to keep the channel's identity, keep it running all the time. And that's going to be a huge benefit. So a lot of these features right now are going to make it work better. And I'm very hopeful that a year from now, the friction, if you will, in the Lightning world will be radically less. But the security issues will still be there. Yeah. And that's where we're trying to be ready. We're just trying to make sure that we have VLS well-positioned and in the right, direction and with all the right connections and stuff, so that as the problem becomes recognized and you turn up the intensity on needing to solve that, that we're ready for that. Like, there's something to use and it has working examples and people who know about it. And that'll make that happen.
Awesome. Ken, this has been fantastic. I'm grateful for the work you and your team are doing. Like it's sorely needed. I think it's important for people to realize that, Lightning is still a work in progress, but we're making great progress. I sometimes disparagingly say it's been 4 years, but also it's crazy how much progress we've made in 4 years.
Yeah.
So it's important to keep ourselves grounded in reality. I would say to you, first of all, you have me on Signal now, so consider me a resource. If I can help you navigate the space, I do have just a lot of friends in Bitcoin. I hope OpenSats will help you guys out on the money side. Before we wrap up, do you have any final thoughts for the freaks before we close?
Well, I'd like to call out and thank all the different teams and groups that we work with for being as positive as they are. The LDK team is very near and dear to us. We use the LDK library, so our code is styled on their thing and uses their interfaces.
Awesome.
Square was an initial supporter, the earliest supporter, so they've been supporting us the whole way through. The Blockstream team and the Core Lightning team are really enjoyable to work with. They're really professional. Everybody's, almost perfectly aligned. There's a lot of common ground and people know that, we're all trying to get to the same place. It's true of all the different teams. And so we're definitely not here alone. In fact, VLS is of no use at all by itself. You have to combine it with a node and a vibrant ecosystem in order for it to make sense. So I'm really appreciative of everybody else being there and having being so much fun to work with. Maybe it's just the simple thing to say. So
cheers to that. To be clear, just to put this out into the mind share, what I would just fucking love to see, like my dream, like if I could wake up tomorrow morning, like the dream would be like a nice little piece of hardware that I can plug in at home that like connects to Wi-Fi or Ethernet. And then it just is instantly compatible with something like Voltage, where it's just very easy to run my own node in the cloud and it just connects back to my little VLS signer. And like, I think at the bare minimum, you should be able to build it yourself. But I think there should also be like a nice little polished piece of hardware that I can, give 90% margins to some enterprising businessman to make me like this little nice device that I could tell people, plug this in, go to Voltage, press the big start node button, follow this pairing setup, and it just fucking handles it for you. That would be my ideal situation from an independent node runner.
So that is a shared vision. That's completely on our roadmap. We want to see exactly that and other related things. But that one's a very important one because I think the early adopters in the world are going to want that one. The other ones, like the enterprises or the mass market green light stuff, are going to have more inertia and take longer to get all spun right. up. But the early adopters are the we can get feedback from them immediately. And so the thing you just described is absolutely in reach. You could actually make that now.
Yeah, that was the fuck you, Matt. Like you can just do that now. Yeah, I know.
Well, you would have to add the networking part around the signer. So we have the signer part for you.
Right.
You need a signer controller, if you want to think of it that way. That's exactly what Stackwork is working on. And actually maybe you're almost 100% aligned with what they're building. So, you should talk to them and see.
I'm visiting Paul in 2 weeks. I'll just I'll harass him.
It's not obvious to me where there's any difference in there. They are talking about a small device for home, connect to something in the cloud.
Let's make that a reality. I like that idea. And, Ken, I don't know how you feel about the Lightning Network. To me, I think of Lightning as two different there's almost two different Lightning Networks. It's like this corporate regulated Lightning Network that has these massive routing nodes. And then there's this sovereign freedom Lightning Network. And obviously because it's Lightning, everything's interoperable. But I think there's product market fit on the regulated side, just an interoperable protocol between custodians. It's very obvious, works really well. You want to send between River and Kraken and all this shit. It works fantastically well. I still think the jury's out on the freedom side. And so to me, it's incredibly important that we provide as many tools as possible to the independent node runners, because they're the front line of that situation, right? They're the ones that provide the hop between you and River, so you don't have to KYC or get your channel whitelisted or whatever to do that. And almost everything in Lightning development, I'm not going to be that dismissive. That's fucked up. I'm very grateful for open source developers, but there's a weird disadvantage that has happened where you automatically start off from the back foot if you're an independent node operator versus a corporate node operator that's running on ClearNet, that's doing all these different things. So those kind of things that level the playing field, that make some random person in Singapore or something who's willing to put 10 Bitcoin on a node because they're able to secure it, that could be the difference between, where sovereign Lightning is in 5 years, or freedom oriented Lightning, where is it in 5 years versus it takes 10 years or 15 years or something like that.
I'm hoping the L402 stuff explodes any day now. That, you know what I'm talking about? The Wall Street Journal and the other publications that require a $20 a month subscription, that they're leaving money on the table because I want to, spend a quarter or whatever the market, whatever the price is to read a given article, but I'm not going to get a $20 subscription. Lightning Labs has proposed something called L402. 402 is the status code for
payment required.
Yeah. Which never was used, but Lightning could actually be the right thing for that, because you could have a small, wallet in your browser, and then when you go to the Wall Street Journal, it says, do you want to pay a nickel for this or a quarter or whatever it is, and you just say yes, and now you read the article. It's anonymous. They don't have to have an account. There's the advantages seem obvious to me, because in this day and age where everyone's stealing all the account information, that's the biggest liability. So instead, if I just had a little bucket and it filled up with Bitcoin every day, that would be wonderful.
Everyone's sharing their Netflix account information. Ken, how familiar are you with Noster?
A little bit. I've been following it. I'm not running a Noster relay yet, although I'm certainly
thinking. The cool part is you don't have to, but you're able to if you want to.
Yeah. Right. I probably would, just to check it out.
And you seem like the type who would just ape in and just immediately run a relay. I
ran my own news servers back in the day. Noster is actually echoing back to UUCP for me. Yep. I don't know if that.
I could see that.
It was unregulated. You could create it if you had support from other people, and other people would peer it, if you know what I mean. Then those news groups would happen. And there were different things for different folks. Like there were some really scary stuff that you could go look at if you wanted to. And then there were really safe, you know, there was, you know, alt.pets, you know, with, you know, lots of pictures of cats. So,
but anyway,
Noser's getting back to that. And it would be nifty to be able to layer some payment in there so that you could.
So there, we've already done that. That has been done. Like we there's LNURL support essentially. So there's, you can attach to your Noster pub key, you can attach your LNURL or your Lightning address if you want human readable. And so like right now, like this live chat that we have in the front of the screen is through something called zap.stream. The audience can get there through my redirects, dispatch.com/stream. But I didn't have to do anything additional to set this up, right? It's just my Noster pub key, which is attached to my LNURL. And then as a result, they're able to support the show live in line with the comments. As you can see, like if someone puts a comment and they have a big Zap, pseudo Carlos, Zap 2.1 KSATs, it highlights it and does all this stuff. And why do I get to that? Because early on to me, obviously, I'm not going to pay $20 a month for New York Times to read a single article. Like, obviously, like there's something there in terms of small paywalls. But I think the future is actually something that we call value for value, which is information wants to be free. So as a result, you provide that information out. And Noster has this novel way of basically, you control your own social network graph, even if you're not running your own relay. So if one relay decides to censor you, your social graph still continues as long as other people are connected to the other relays, and you can always run your own relay. So it has this situation that it works really well for this value for value concept. And the difference with value for value versus a paywall concept is this idea is that you put the information out there because information wants to be free regardless, and it's going to be free regardless. And it doesn't matter how much DRM you put on it. People are going to take a screenshot and share it on TikTok and Twitter and everything. And you put the information out there, and if people want to give you value, they can send you Bitcoin. And if you reduce that friction to the point where it's convenient for them to do it, doesn't cost them that much to do it, people will actually go and do it. So I think the low-hanging fruit, the first step is micro paywalls, and we're going to see that first because New York Times and whatnot are not going to switch to a value-for-value model. And then ultimately what we will see is we will see content creators, if that's at the end of the day, New York Times wants to call themselves a paper record. They're just a glorified content creator. Content creators that are doing value for value will get more Bitcoin for it than if you do paywalls. And that's kind of how I view the whole thing unfolding.
Yeah, I totally agree that it's exciting to me because it means that we're going to see a lot more diversity in content because, you know, some random person who has a random niche today may not fit into, you know, Twitter or any of the other social networks in terms of acceptability and monetization, and they're at someone else's whim, and now they can get monetized. And if they do a quality job, people will reward them, and then you'll see more of that. And so that will reverberate, and we're going to see all kinds of really cool, interesting stuff.
And they can't easily be rugged. And also why I bring it up, by the way, is with Noster, we have a similar issue. Like if I post or like something or, you know, repost something, like my keys have to be hot for that. And so there's different projects. I saw Pablo in the comments. He has something called NSEC Bunker, but there's different projects that are basically designed to make it so we're not pasting our private keys into a bunch of different wallets. And there's a lot of similarity there. But in this regard, at least money's not on the line. It's more reputation or speech or social graph, or I don't know how to. Some ways that might be more important. I haven't really circled that square yet. But what's cool about Noster is it's simple, and so we don't have to solve all the problems. And there's this nice viral open source community that's building it out. It's really cool. So I implore you to check it out. That's my Noster shill of the episode.
Yeah, there's another Noster thing is I see people using it whenever you need to do a pub sub broadcast effectively. So like CoinJoin via Noster,
Is
the thing apparently.
There
are many other examples of that where you want to advertise a service or even you want to solicit bids for something. You put it out in Noster and say, you know, I'm over here. If you want this, come get it. And that's cool.
Well, anyway, Ken, check out Noster.
Will do.
Okay. So, I mean, this conversation has been fantastic. As always, freaks, Sill Dispatch is supported by viewers like you. What is this, PBS? We do not have ads or sponsors. We rely on your Bitcoin donations, value for value. We just talked about it. You can support the show via Podcasting 2.0. You can support the show via our Nostr live stream. You can support the show via our dedicated donation page, all powered by Bitcoin. All the links are at SillaDispatch.com. I'm going to read the top four messages from last week's episode. We have Ride or Die Freak Eric99 with 400,000 sats saying, stay humble, stack sats. We have Mary Oscar with 100,001 sats saying, okay, here we go, fingers crossed. We have 8 Mithrander with 100,000 sats saying, having the local Bitcoin community support local merchants in adoption seems like the best approach. And then we have Ride or Die Freak at Cum Rocket with 69,420 sats. Great conversation, worth every sat, especially the successful ones. Cheer and peace, G. I want to say a huge shout out to the entire Dispatch audience. I appreciate you all. It's always a pleasure when I get to meet you guys in person. Thank you for joining for the live chat to all of you who have done that. You guys make the show unique. And just a huge shout out to Ken. Thanks, Ken, for joining us.
Well, thanks to the audience and all the other folks who are being supportive. It's really great. Thank you.
And one last thing. I'm going to give you the floor one more time. You're an open source project. Are you seeking contributors? You need help over there?
We're trying to grow, but we need to grow slow, carefully, because it is a security project. So, you know, security code needs to be carefully reviewed, and we need to, you know, on and on and on. There are other aspects of VLS, though, which don't involve security directly. So we need people to document. We need folks to think about how to integrate it with other things. I think that's probably the biggest draw, which is if you see a way to use VLS in an interesting way, please contact us. Because we'd love to talk more about it and learn about it and help out if we can. Those are the things that'll keep us going.
You have the website vls.tech. What's the best way for people to contact you?
So if you go to vls.tech, down on the bottom, there are a bunch of links on how to contact us. So Twitter works. We're a Matrix kind of place. So if you're good with Matrix, that's absolutely the best way. We have a Matrix. I think it's called a group, but it's a set of associated channels, you know, VLS general, VLS dev, and yeah, on and on and on. Please, you know, join those and ask us questions, or, you know, offer criticism, whatever. We'd really love to hear about it.
Love it. By the way, Ken, our live chat before was Nostr, was a Matrix live chat, and Nostr replaced it.
Just cool.
Okay. Huge shout out to Ken. Thank you, freaks. I'll see you guys next time. Stay humble, stack sats. Cheers.
Bye-bye.